This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Rogue Rebels Podcast. I'm your host, Sal Perellis of the Rogue Rebels. You don't need my full name, but there it is. And I'm here to talk about books and High Republic. So strap in, High Republic fans and fans of Star Wars books, because it's going to be a wild ride. And you know what that means. You know what it means? I got a guest. And this is my book buddy. My guest is one of my favorite book buddies, and I don't have her on every book podcast, but I try to get her on every time, and I think we're going to close up phase two of the High Republic with the High Republic Path of Vengeance, and I want to catch up with Laura from Force Toast. How you doing?
I'm doing amazing, Sal. Thank you so much for having me back. I am very excited and honored, as always, to be one of your book buddies.
You are my book buddy. It has been written in stone, and so you're obligated to come on these podcasts all the time now. So, you know.
Happily.
I'm going to be hitting you up like once a month. It is what it is.
Yeah, it's going to be the same situation it was this time. We were just like, have you finished reading this book yet? I'm going to be like, no, I'm way behind. You're like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have to come back to you like 2 months later and be like, yeah. I finished, finally.
Awesome. Okay. I'm only 3 chapters into Rise of the Red Blade, so we need to step that up.
Yeah, you're farther ahead than I am, so good for you.
I thought I was the bad student. How are you, Laura? How is Force Toast? How are things going over there?
Force Toast is great. Everything's good. We're doing sort of a summer hours situation with Force Toast, which we've done a couple of years now, where we just every 3 weeks, just so that we can like be outside and enjoy more of summer.
Oh, you guys like
life
to touch grass
and
I get
vacations.
It.
Right, every once in a while. Sometimes we need to. I'll be first to admit I can be a little bit chronically online sometimes, so touching grass is absolutely needed.
Good times, good times. I am doing the usual thing that I do in between shows when everybody else is going, like, there's no more Star Wars, and I hate to you know who you are, other podcasts. Somewhere Araj is getting like a scratch behind his ear or something, like, who's talking about it? So like, that's my chance to catch up on all the books and all the other things. I gotta call you, I gotta call in backup, I gotta call my deep cut down homies. It's you, it's King Tom. I'm sure there's other names on that list,
right? That's about all I can think of off the top of my head.
We're the ones who show up in that back alley brawl for that Anchorman scene, like with the trident or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys are the ones that I have to call when we're like, all right, it's down. Like, what's going on? Who's down? Yep. Who's down?
Rolling up with our lightsabers. Yeah. It's in our blasters that are toys. Yeah, yo, we're there.
Who got that High Republic fire right now? All right, Laura, I need you. Yeah. So it's good times. Yep. It's summer. It's getting hot. I don't like being outside. I might touch a little too much grass. I have an outdoor job.
Yeah, no, I do not. But I will. I hear you, though. It gets real humid here in Chicago. So, you know, I go out and I touch grass, and then I'm like, ooh, it feels sticky. And then I go back inside.
Right. Okay. I'm glad. Well, you know, touching grass at all is nice. But there is, like I tell my son, there's you can like overdo anything. Mm-hmm. So he'll be like, can
moderation.
You, is there such a, you know, this is when you have a kid, they come and they ask you things all the time. Today, he asked me, is it possible to drink too much water? And I, having seen the very first X-Men movie, am like, I think so.
Yeah,
pretty
I remember
sure
that movie.
I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure you can drink too much water.
I think that's a real thing, though. I'm pretty sure you're right, because I think Alice has done it before. She's like, I almost drowned myself by accident. I didn't mean to.
Yes.
I drank too much water. I'm like, Jesus.
That's rough.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna do a force toast thing right now. I'm gonna be like, what are you drinking? Because I'm almost through with my margarita. And I'm
ooh, we're doing awesome. Happy hour.
Are
sweet.
You doing happy hour? Like, what's going on? Let me have a guest happy hour. Can I borrow it?
Yeah, please do. Take it. Take happy hour anytime you want. I can't claim the monopoly on it. Awesome. No, I'm drinking water today. I've got a little bit of like a sore throat thing happening, and then I've got a big work event on Wednesday. So I'm like, I just need to stay hydrated. Yeah. Like, also, I went really hard over the weekend. So I had I got to back off a little bit.
You want that? You want that immune system tip top for those big events? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. And then it can crash after that. It can all go. Yeah. Go down after Wednesday.
I got a podcast coming up with Randy.
Fun.
So that's going to be a good, I'm going to have some fireball at the ready for that. That'll be good time.
As you should. Perfect.
Real quick, just to bring back Team Fireball. It's been a while since I podcasted just with my boy. But you can check out all of our stuff at theroguerebels.com. Go like our Facebook page. We are on Instagram, TikTok, and Hive. At the Rogue Rebels, and we're on Twitter at Rogue Rebels Fan because somebody took the Rogue Rebels and they haven't like tweeted since 2013, and I'm really upset about it.
Rude.
Anyway, where can people find you guys on the interwebs, Laura?
You can find my show Force Toast at Force Toast Pod on Instagram and on Twitter. And then I'm on Twitter at @shutup_Laura, and I'm much more active there than I am on Instagram. But it's the same handle on Instagram.
Instagram is our bread and butter. Because I don't know if you know this or not. We dress up as Star Wars people.
You do. That is your thing. And Instagram is a lot more, I think, amenable to pictures and imagery.
So here's the thing, Laura. I'm a 42-year-old man who puts on a costume and waves around a plastic lightsaber that lights up. And I feel good about it.
You should, though. You should. I mean, you got to think about how there are a lot like older people, a lot more older than you, people that still do that. So
yeah.
I don't think you need to feel weird about it yet.
I don't. I have fun with it. I like to be a grown man who waves around a plastic lightsaber. But I also like to not take myself too seriously. When you're like, are you
an adult
who plays with toys? Oh, Laura, it was Father's Day yesterday.
It was.
I got a few Father's Day gifts, right? So Lizzie got me a Dr. Aphra graphic novel.
Ooh, which is like cool.
Super wonderful. So I was like, she was like, oh, it's Father's Day and Pride Month. And I was like, that makes sense.
Perfect.
Good times. And then my son got me this is going to sound ridiculous, but there is, I don't know if you're aware of this like line, but there's a line of Star Wars toys called Star Wars Mission Fleet. And they're like smaller, like they're kind of like maybe for like preschool, like they're for younger kids. They're not 3 and 3. They're not Black Series. They're like little, you know, 2-inch characters, and they have little vehicles and stuff. And usually they come with a vehicle. And I've been walking around for a year and a half going like, I should have bought Bo-Katan when I had the chance. Now she's coming up in Mando season 3. And now she's like, now I'm going to end up paying $50 for that stupid fighter on eBay. Axel probably hit up a Target with his mom and found me a Bo-Katan and the Gauntlet Fighter, which I don't think is to scale, but it's still awesome to sit on my desk.
Oh, that's so great, though. That's such a great, like, oh, those are perfect gifts.
I have little Bo-Katan standing with my little Boba and my little Mando. Because look, like, aww. I like Jedi. On paper, I'm like a Jedi kind of like fan guy, right? But like, when I have like my little toys, those Mandos just look cool. Like the Jedi all look the same.
In practice.
Like, when they make a Voss Jedi, we'll talk. Hit me with that Kanan. Perfection. We'll talk. But, you know, when they're just giving me like the same, when it's Anakin and Obi-Wan, dude, I got 32 of them. I don't need that sitting on my desk. But I'll
right.
have.
Nobody's having to hit up eBay for those.
Yeah, no, those are staying at price. good times. I actually listened to the recent episode of Force Toast, which I always do. I love hearing you and Alice talk about all things Star Wars, including books. And just for our listeners out there, like, I don't know if you guys are like me, because while I create podcasts, I am also a podcast listener. What was, Laura, are you as old as I am, where you remember the, like, just for men hair things, where they're like, I'm not only the company leader, I'm a customer, or something. You know what I'm talking about?
Funny story, quickly, about just for men stuff. I use the Just for Men beard dye to tint my eyebrows, so I regularly stock Just for Men items in this house, and I've got news for you. It's not just for men.
Cool. No, I love it. We're taking down the patriarchy one step at a time. I'm down.
Amen. One eyebrow at a time.
You, me, and Ben and Jerry's. We go hard. But they used to have a commercial that was like, and it was like the guy, and he was like, I'm not only the founder, I'm the customer, or something like that. So I not only like have Laura all the time as my book buddy, but I listen to the podcast. And it's, for me, there's so very few like book podcasts, you know, when you want to watch the shows or the movies, everybody's talking about Star Wars. But when you just want to talk about books, that field narrows quite a bit.
I sincerely appreciate that. Thank you. Like I, and we have a lot of fun with those book recaps. We try to do them justice, you know, because
absolutely.
Yeah, I hear you. There's not a ton. I've got, you know, a couple good friends that do mm-hmm. book podcasts, but mm-hmm. like, you're right. There's really not a ton, especially when you compare it to the number of people who are talking about The Mandalorian while it's airing, you know?
Exactly. But I just want to say I enjoy you guys' recaps.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
I might call Alice about some comic book soon. But yeah,
I'm sure that would be really fun. I unfortunately cannot help you with comics, and we'll talk about that maybe a little bit here today.
And yeah, we might get into that. All right, let's see. I got some news. What's going on? New High Republic. Okay, we're getting back into phase 3. We are going. Okay. Did you watch Young Jedi Adventures? I'm putting you in the hot seat right now.
Okay, I didn't watch all of them. Okay. I think I watched the first 3 or 4 episodes. Mm-hmm. So I saw like the first 6 to 8 shorts or so.
Got it. Let me tell you something. That's the gist of it. Mm-hmm. Very cute.
Okay.
Very enjoyable. The music is great. I love the music.
Yeah.
I did a podcast with Struthers and the entire cast of Dinner with the Healers, which is Struthers and his family. That was the last episode for our listeners. Good times. Great show for young kids. I feel like this would be a really good thing for those who, like, you know, preschool age, like your first dip into Star Wars is this. Good times. You go, Star Wars.
Yep.
But I just was curious. Like, for me, I was like, ooh, I get to add a, like, thing on TV to my High Republic playlist. And that's what I was happy about.
I'm happy about Nibs. Nibs is real cute.
Nubs.
I enjoyed Nubs. My Nubs. Bad. Nubs. I enjoyed Nubs quite a bit. In that, yeah, Nibs is the chocolate. Nubs is the blue guy. Got it. he's adorable. It's been a while since I watched it. I watched it like when it first came out, which was May the 4th, right? Yeah, and so we were gonna watch it for my show, my other show, The Jedi Way, with John Rocha. And he was like, I think he watched like one episode and he's like, oh, I've made a huge mistake. He's like, I can't watch all of this. The show's not for us. And I was like, yeah, you're right, it's not. But I did watch 8 for you, so Jesus, dude.
That's fair. You got to take everything with a grain. Like, I'm a Star Wars parent. So, like, this is the kind of thing where I watch it and I'm like, man, if the kids were little again, I bet you they would dig this. This would totally be their thing.
Yeah. But sadly for us adults that are just adults in our house, it's definitely not for us. So. Yeah, for
sure. I went and I screamed at my kids. I was like, you guys are born like 10 years too late. Or early. Sorry. Math is not my strong suit, it turns out.
They're like, sorry?
They were like, why is my father yelling at us? It's probably about Star Wars again.
Right. They're like, we can't help that, but yes. Okay.
Look, blame yourself, old man.
Right?
Okay. So, High Republic stuff is happening. There was High Republic stuff in Jedi Survivor. I am going to do a podcast about Jedi Survivor very soon. I finally beat the game. I'm very excited and happy about it. I know you were very excited to be a part of the Cal Kestis fan club, but we're not too excited about the book after you read it. But that's fine.
Yeah, sadly, that book wasn't for me. That book was for some people, but it was, and I'm glad that a lot of people got a lot of enjoyment out of it, but that book ended up just kind of not being my cup of tea. But I still need to go and actually watch all like the cutscenes and everything from Jedi Survivor because I'm behind on that now. And now there's High Republic content out there that I don't know anything about, and I don't like that.
So I'll give you like a little bit of a like it's very High Republic connected, but it's also just connected to like characters in the High Republic who you won't know.
Okay.
But there are like a few little things where you'll be like you'll watch the cutscenes and you'll be like, oh, I know what happened.
Interesting. You know, so there's like phase one and phase two references in there?
I believe that the High Republic that it connects to is mainly phase one.
Okay.
In fact, I'll say only phase one, unless there's something I missed.
Fair enough.
It's mainly like, and not even really connected. It just like, I think the story that it, or the characters that it connects to, they exist during phase one.
Okay.
That's what I'll say.
All right. I still like that it has any connections to it at all, though, and that it's introducing a broader audience to High Republic references and that's hopefully getting them so excited rad. To maybe get more into it someday.
Exactly. It's super cool. And even just like running around the little places, like there's a few, you know, when you play the game and you're exploring these things and all these connections to the High Republic, sometimes you're actually going into these ancient High Republic ruins or whatever it is. So seeing some of the, for me, when I'm playing the video game, I'm like, oh, this is so dope. This is like what a High Republic temple looked like or whatever. I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff that I, as a High Republic fan, really enjoyed.
Neat.
Yeah. Good times. But now I have beat the game and I'm working on unlocking all of the cosmetics so I can make my cute little costumes and be like, Fashion Week with Cal and be like, now you can see Cal rocking a pink poncho and a haircut, windswept hair with his blaster inspired. I made a High Republic BD. So
I love this. Wait, so like there's, I feel like I don't remember seeing a lot of this with the customization with the first game. Is this like a new thing with Survivor that people can do this?
So like it wasn't as deep in the first game. You had a few options, but it was almost like, the options were like different ponchos.
Yeah, now so like people have done like the different facial hair and stuff. Yes, it's like
now
it's so cool.
There's like haircuts, there's facial hair. Like Axel beat the game, my son, and his Cal looks like Ted Lasso. His Cal has a little mustache, he has the little like cropped kind of haircut, and he has like tan pants and a blue shirt. And
oh my gosh.
His Cal is Ted Lasso. And as he's playing through the entire game, all the cutscenes, it's like Ted Lasso talking to whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh my
like
gosh.
So it's really cute.
Amazing.
I enjoyed
they need
that.
To be able to get like aviator sunglasses for him. That'll be the icing on the cake there.
So I've been like going through trying to unlock all the cosmetic collectibles, but now I'm to the point to where I haven't been able to find a list that is sorted the way that I want it to be, and then I'm also finding that exploring the parts of the game that I haven't explored yet just end up in me like, well, I might as well just explore this whole cave, because it'll be like, oh, the mustache you want is in this cave and a thing, and I'll be like, oh, I might as well just get everything while I'm here. So now I think I'm just going to 100% the whole game and then replay it on New Game Plus with all of my cosmetics available, because I'm doing like my current little setup is like a semi Kanan inspired look. So he has he has slicked back hair that's not quite a ponytail because it's short. And then he has like a full beard. And then he has like a green and brown shirt and gray pants that kind of look like Kanan-ish, but not necessarily the same thing.
Oh, I like it. To like kind of play as Kanan almost. Yeah. That's neat.
So I think I might mess around with the looks and like come up with my own little fashion design. Watch out. Fashion Week or whatever that
right?
is. Because here comes Cal Kestis.
Fashion Week.
Watch out, Rogue Rebels.
Cal Kestis, but kind of Kanan Jarrus.
Yeah, Cal Kestis with his different looks. So yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with the game, and I think I'm just going to 100% it and be the best Jedi ever.
I love that. And video games are crazy, because I'm like, my video games, when I got done with video games for life, was like Super Nintendo and like Super Mario 64. And I'm like, you can't just run around and like... search around in a cave for a mustache. Like, that wasn't an option then.
No, it wasn't.
So that's like kind of wild hearing that.
Mario
that
came
now.
Pre-equipped
it.
With a mustache, and there was nothing you could do
he
about
did.
It.
He did. He was pre-mustached, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You couldn't change him to scruffy. You couldn't change him to clean-shaven. You couldn't do nothing. Mario
yeah,
couldn't
could
have
lose
a mullet.
His hat. No. Your option was you can lose the hat and then go find the hat, or you get to keep the hat. That's it. That's all you get to do.
Like, you could get the cape. Or a fire flower, and then your overalls were white.
Yep.
Those were your
it's
options.
Beautiful thing. Yeah.
Listen here,
very
children,
limited.
While I talk about the Super Nintendo and the glory of the 16-bit era.
Yeah. Back in my day, we couldn't customize the facial hair.
You couldn't go to Universal Studios and punch a question block in real life, apparently. I haven't been there yet.
I haven't done that at Universal Studios, but I haven't been there since January 2020. That was when I was last there.
We used to have we live in California, and their annual pass was like barely more expensive than the thing. So that was what we could afford. And so we would go like three or four times a year. And I think we stopped it just before they put like Harry Potter Land. But we used to go the Simpsons ride. The kids loved the Simpsons ride. It was good times.
Yeah, I remember the Simpsons ride. My sister like got motion sickness on it when we were there a couple years ago.
Good times.
It's like sorry.
Oh, yeah. And we took the kids on the Terminator 3D show thingy before they closed that. So at least my kids witnessed the T-1 million.
That's cool. That's culture right
good
there.
Yeah,
it's culture and history.
That's history. Now it's Shrek or something. I don't know.
Shrek.
I don't know what it is. I'm not sure, honestly. Sometimes they put snow in. There's like the Grinch. I don't know what goes on there, but we rode the trolleys around. The Fast and Furious cars dance. It's been a while since I've been there, honestly.
Yeah, the Fast and the Furious ride when I was there was great, but it was only great because the chick that was like running it, like walking and like talking to the automated like movie playing, it was just hysterical. Like these people that are like improvisers that get these jobs to go work at the parks are like so talented and so funny, and they just make the experience so much better.
I love that. I love people who like take pride in their job and like these kind of things that you don't think of to make it work, but really pull it all together.
Right.
You know, so that it breaks my heart a little bit, but we won't talk about the Star Cruiser.
No, I'm probably not the person to talk about it with.
It makes me sad. That's fair.
I know. I'm sorry. I did think of you when it closed. I was like, oh, but he said it was great. So like, it would have been great to actually go to it someday.
Mm-hmm. I get it. But I am sad. We did want to go back.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, well. Such is life.
Pour one out.
Nothing lasts forever, people. Hey. Anything you're going to put off for tomorrow, you guys make sure you get out there and do today. Call somebody. Call your family. Tell them you love them. Because you never know when the Galactic Star Cruiser will close.
You never know when Disney's going to shut that down.
You never know. You never know when they're going to remove Willow from Disney Plus. So call the people you love in your life every day. Makes me sad.
I get scared for every Star Wars series that I love because of that Willow move. That makes me scared.
Yeah, it does.
Like, why would they ever take any Star Wars stuff off? But, like, why would they have taken Willow? I don't get it.
I don't understand business, I think.
No, I don't either. And yeah. I have, like, worked in, we've worked in businesses, you know, like, our whole working right. lives. And I still am yeah. like, what?
Look, I don't watch Succession or whatever that show is, but I don't understand these moves.
Like, I don't watch that show either. Yeah. I will watch it someday.
How does taking things away make you money? I don't understand.
Yeah. I don't get it. Good question.
You know, but just one thing. I'm going to throw one little thing out there. I'm pretty sure I said it in another episode, but the spirit of the Star Cruiser and the risks that they took and the like going all in on it, on that belief and that like that thing to be like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make it happen and it's going to be all out. I feel like that's something that George Lucas and Walt Disney would have thrown all their energy behind, regardless of the cost and loss and profits and gains. And I think that's something that business people of today don't really understand or do. Like, Lucas and Disney both had that energy of like, I'm going to make this. Like, it's not about money. It's about the art and it's about making this thing that will endure. And I feel sad for the, like, because I think the people making those decisions are not thinking that way that these people did.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think that's a great sentiment. And that absolutely would be the case that, you know, it really was kind of in like the spirit of Walt Disney and George yeah. Lucas that somebody decided to take a massive swing mm-hmm. and give that a try. And it's great that they did. And, you know, maybe they learned some valuable lessons from it and right. we'll get something different that maybe it'll be better in the future. Who knows? I mean, who knows so. What they took away from it that we might get someday later on.
I hope so. All right. I guess we should get into the book now. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe. Feeling... I think that works.
All right. Let's do, like, before we get into spoilers, I'm going to give my spoiler-free thing. I don't, like, phase two has a much different feel than phase one. But as it's closing up, I really am finding myself much more attached. Not more, but, well, maybe more. I'm finding myself much more attached to the characters that it focused on. In a very real way. I don't want to say even than phase one, because phase one, there were my favorite characters, but there was such a broader scope. Phase two was very focused on some characters, and I find myself very like connected to those characters. And this book is definitely that for Marta and Yana.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
I think, yeah, I totally agree. You're right. It's much more focused is a great way to think of it. I also think that, like, because it's a little bit shorter, it's like more rereadable. Like, it's a less daunting task that to go back and reread all of phase one than it is phase two.
Yeah. And the way that they sort of orchestrate, like, if you just read or Path of Deceit,
phase two than phase one,
and then Path of Vengeance, it sort of rolls right into it.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It really does. And you're also getting some of the like Battle of Jeddah stuff in there. Exactly. So it's like you almost don't even need I don't want to say you don't need it because I think it's all valid, but you kind of don't. You can stick with that YA stuff and that's it.
Yeah, definitely. But it's like the stuff that it gives you from Battle of Jeddah really focuses on this character. So you'll get like what you need for this story, which is like
precisely
pretty cool. I think they did a little bit, I don't want to say a better job of that, but like whatever, like if you're sticking to the middle grade stuff or the YA stuff, you like you'll get a full story out of those things. The only crossover might be that Path of Jeddah audiobook.
Sorry,
the Battle of Jeddah. But let's see, what else do I got? I was really invested in Marta's story and Yana's, and I feel like it delivered on that. But I definitely feel like if you want the bigger, like, overarching story, you probably want to go with, like, Convergence and Cataclysm.
Yes. Not to be confused with Catalyst, which is not part of the High Republic.
Never.
But
not
every
at all.
We will inevitably at some point say Catalyst instead of Cataclysm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I almost made it a full podcast without doing that. Almost. But yeah.
No, we're getting it out of the way now.
You just let him know. Let him know. Listener, if you read Cataclysm, how many times did you say Catalyst when you were telling people what you were reading? Come on, be honest.
I don't even want to go back and like listen to that episode of Force Toast because I'm like, how many times did I say the wrong time? Like, honestly, through the entirety of like phase two, how many times did I say it wrong?
Hey, I blame Star Wars.
I don't want to know. Yeah, it's their fault.
That's on y'all. That's on y'all. I'll try to make sales off a five-year-old book. Get out of here. let's see. Like I said, I enjoyed the book, but like, I realize that it is really focused on these characters. So if you are not interested in those characters, you might not even worry about this one. But if you are, this is going to give you some very good things. And I feel like this also is the one that really closes up phase two. With that kind of aftermath. Because Cataclysm ends and you get a lot of the Jedi stuff, like you guys were saying, the Jedi, how the Jedi end things. But now you're getting a lot of the characters, which I was very intrigued because I feel like these characters are a lot more connected to phase one. So I really was curious into how they were going to end things. And I feel like I did get some answers, but I also still have some questions.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat where I definitely got more answers from this novel in term than I did, I think, from Cataclysm. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that I think Cataclysm is a stronger novel, I'm glad that we got some of the answers that we got. It's some of the things with this with Path of Vengeance, though, is like I got answers to questions that I didn't ask and didn't care about. So I'm like, there's some things I wish I would have like. Like, y'all just tied this whole thing up and you didn't answer A, B, or C. Like, I've got more questions, which is why I'm fairly certain that it's not, this isn't over, right? We're not leaving these characters. It's not goodbye. This is like a see you later with these phase two characters. And I'm hoping we'll come back and tie into some of these stories that I'm still looking for some answers to, you know?
I'm with you for sure. I hope this is not the last we see of these characters. But I wonder, I'm just like very curious into how many connection, like how many of the clues do we have and pieces that are going to pick up in phase three? Because I don't feel like, I'm very conscious of where I left phase one as I went into phase two and been like, okay, now we're going to go back and I'm going to get some of the answers. And I got like some of them, but there are still a few pretty big ones. That I'm like, where are we going with this? And what are we, you know, how are we going to move forward? So I'm very curious into like, if we're ever going to get that resolution, that connective tissue on some of those things.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I'm in the same boat and I'm sure we will. I'm sure that'll be like a thing where you have to kind of go back and do like a reread where you'll catch some of those things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I'm still hoping like I'm seeing a hole, and I know it's 150 years later, but there's just way less of a connection to the thing that I thought that these books in particular were going to resolve.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where I'm at. I guess it's about time to start getting into spoilers. Are you ready?
Yeah, that works. Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to like try to summarize the book as concisely as possible. And then we're just going to have a good conversation about it. So.
I'm down. Works for me.
The book focuses on Marta and Yana Roe, both of the Evereni, who we assume are later related to Marcian Roe. And the book has three phases. The Battle of Jeddah, the Battle for the Path, and the Battle of Dalna, which we have seen in other media except for the Battle for the Path. So in the beginning, the Battle of Dalna, like we catch up with Marta on Dalna, a lot of the stuff we've seen from the Battle of Jeddah audiobook, and she has Kevmo's lightsaber. But there's also a thing happening with Marta and Yana, how they're speaking with the ghosts of people they've lost. In Marta's case, it's Kevmo, and in Yana's case, it's Kor.
Kor.
Kor, who is the daughter of the... of the Herald who like she had a romantic relationship with. And I still don't really know how to take that, but I think it's very interesting and fascinating. And when I picked up that book immediately, I was like, oh, what is happening here? And it's very interesting. So you get through this, that Yana, their whole job on the Battle of Jeddah, which was to like sow chaos on Jeddah while they try to steal the Rod of Seasons and find it. They kind of fail. No, do they get it? They sort of fail because the Herald gets caught and they don't get away with it. But Yana ends up breaking the Herald out of prison and taking the Rod back to Dalna in the next part of the book, while Marta is training with a little guy she rescued. The little guy, he's an Ovissian, who, for anybody who doesn't know what that is, it's the guy in Rise of Skywalker who goes, "Win the war!"
Bulio.
Yeah, I just keep picturing him every time.
I know, like, I'm picturing him with, like, Marta, who is, like, what, a teenager, early 20s or something? I'm like, it's weird. It's a weird picture.
Oh, there's some shipping
head.
Happening
like,
soon, yeah. And then it's also weird, because I'm still on the, like, she's talking to the ghost of her dead ex-boyfriend, theoretically, who was a Jedi. So there's, like, a little bit of guilt in there with whatever's happening with her. But then there's also, like, they start training, and their little training scene of he's like, "Well, I should teach you how to fight." And it's, like, really buff Bulia. All the whole book describes him as being super buff.
Yeah, like I mean, a big guy.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's like through Marta's eyes. But I keep reading the book and I'm like, he's cut. Nice. You know.
His name is Bo-Katan Kuss, and I think that's so weird because that is like a little, it's spelled very much like Bo-Katan, and I'm like, we just came off of season 3 of Mandalorian, and I'm like, why do we have this character whose name is so similar? It bothered me a little bit.
That's fair. That's like me when Solo came out and I was like, why is there another Voss? You know,
yep.
It is what it is. Star Wars names. Am I right?
Right.
There's a training scene where they like train with sticks, and all I can think of is that like scene from the movie Pacific Rim where there's like so much tension. Like,
ooh,
where
I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, this is what I've been thinking this entire time I set up this podcast, was just for me to explain this scene.
Oh, damn it. I ruined it. Okay. Should I just sign off?
Look, I'm going to keep you around. We'll figure this out. We're going to work through it together, Laura. Basically, there's a scene where they train, but it's like the pilot of this guy is training with this girl, and like they're training with sticks and they're fighting and they're very much like in each other's faces, and like there's so much sexual tension. You know what I mean? Like, and that's how these scenes read to me.
It definitely played out like that.
So yeah, that's like part one. They everybody escapes from Jeddah. The mother escapes with Marta. The Herald is caught. Yana ends up breaking him out and all that, and killing their little contact with the Guardians of the Wills. And people start figuring out what's going on with Dalna and start asking questions about the path. Then the battle for the path is when Yana starts breaks this fool out. Meanwhile, Marta is still contending with the mother about like what they're going to do and what the future is. And she's supposed to be the guide, but the mother is the leader. And Yana decides to go with the people who are going back to Planet X for more eggs. For more eggs for the nameless weapon against the Jedi.
Or Marta goes.
Yes, Marta. Marta goes. And she ends up going with buff, good-looking, green-skinned Bo-Katan. It's all I read. I'm like, oh, it's Bo-Katan.
Yeah.
You mean the buff guy? Sweet.
Party of other miscellaneous characters.
Yes. And here's the thing that I was... No, I'll get into that later. They go. They make it to Planet X. They do their thing and they get the eggs, right? But Planet X is this very, like... The way I was reading it was, like, intoxicatingly... Like, she goes and she's like, oh, do I love Bo-Katan? Or are my feelings just augmented, like, you know, by this place?
Euphoric.
Yeah, there you go. And, like, dangerous. There are these creatures that they end up trying to escape, and these giant creatures, and they end up completing the mission. They lose a few people, including Bo-Katan. Bo-Katan dies on this planet as they have a little romance. But as the longer they stay on this planet, is it just me, or do some of them start developing force powers?
Yeah, they definitely do. It's okay. They kind of start. I don't know if they have to have force sensitivity to begin with, or right. if it can hit anybody. Yeah. But it definitely affects every single person that's on the mission to some degree.
Yes. And Yana feels very betrayed by this. As it's happening,
Marta,
she starts
yeah.
to understand what's happening. And then she starts to feel very, like, betrayed, because, like, that's not the belief of the path, is that they shouldn't be abusing the force. But, like, oh, that's why the mother sent this guy, because he's a good tracker, because he uses the force to track things or whatever.
Yeah.
So they lose quite a few people. They end up taking off with two ships, and they bring the eggs back. Meanwhile, on Jeddah, the people that have been touched by the Nameless, like Maddie in particular, Mathea Cathley is a Padawan who, if you read the comics, you're already familiar with. But in this book, she's sort of like the Jedi that we most follow. Her and Olivia Zevron, they've kind of like, it's almost like her memories are muddled. So she knows that they were there for this artifact. And I think, which I kind of thought was interesting, was she doesn't realize that it was a creature. She thinks like the artifact has this power against Jedi, because she doesn't really remember the creature, or she sort of like feels like maybe that's what, like, it's all the artifact's doing. So, because like as we come out of this book, I know, especially for you and me that read Cataclysm, there's a lot of questions about people that encountered the Nameless and what Yoda and his boy are going to do about that. But yep. as I'm going through this book again, like a lot of them, they sort of like put it on. They don't know what happened. Their senses are kind of messed up, and their memories get messed up too. And Maddie in particular seems to think that it's like this. She thinks it's the artifact that was doing it. The Rod of Seasons or whatever.
Got it. All right. I didn't pick up on that. So I'm like that. Some of that, I wonder if some of that played out in the comic. But
yeah.
I know that Olivia got stabbed in the comic, because they mentioned that in this book at least.
Yeah.
But she's okay? Question
yeah,
mark.
She made it all right. Yeah, that happens before this.
Physically,
so, like, she's good.
Yeah,
she's recovered. But like they're all, this is sort of after the battle, so they're all kind of recovering, and she's like, I don't remember exactly what happened, but something scary. So they all decide they're going to go to Jeddah. Well, not all. Mateya and Olivia decide they're going to go to Jeddah.
Or they leave Jeddah to go to Dalna.
Yes, sorry. They ask a few questions. Meanwhile, Yana and the Herald have escaped. They go back to Dalna. The Herald like is going to try to hide out while Yana tries to go back, because the story is that the mother put out is like, oh, the Herald just incited this riot and we didn't know anything about it. How dare he? We want nothing but peace. I'm going to donate 1,000,000 Zuckles to Jeddah or something. And I don't know about you, but just like money is called Zuckles. I don't know why that makes me smile.
It's a fun word for money. I like it. It's much more fun than credits.
Is that Jeddah dollars? What's a Zuckle?
That's silly. What's the exchange rate for credits?
What's the exchange rate on Zuckles? I need to know. How many rupees? What if I want to play Breath of the Wild?
Is that like Mon Calamari Flan?
There you go.
What's that exchange rate?
It still spins, doesn't it? Somewhere.
Yep.
So they get to Dalna and they end up finding Yana and the Herald. There's a reporter somewhere who Marta tries to bring into the path, and she's like, she can help us get our story about the truth. And the mother is like, oh, you naive child, how dare you? She's a reporter and she's just gonna tell lies. And then she shows her footage of the girl being like, I can't wait to throw these fools under the bus. And then Marta feels really dumb.
Yeah.
Which is like, fair.
She's beautifully naive sometimes. Yeah.
But she she's such a believer in this.
Yeah, she is.
That like, and it's clear that she is the believer, whereas like the Herald, like her cousin Yana does not believe. Herald and the mother, we can all clearly see that they're always making some sort of power play, even though we don't know exactly where it's going. But like, it's Marta's like pure belief that gets her in most of these situations.
Yeah, Yana in comparison is very disillusioned, and she kind of is like even in like Path of Deceit.
Yeah,
but by the time we get to her in this, she's like, oh, I'm so over this.
Yeah, she was like never like a believer, right? Like even in Path of Deceit, no. She was there because like she wanted to leave, but she stayed because her girlfriend and all that, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
like we're here, and like even now when she's returning to the past, she's trying to find Marta to see if she convinced her to get away.
Yeah,
Marta. The mother, Marta, the Herald returns. It's this big thing. The mother and the Herald are sort of like fighting over what they're going to do, like in front of the Path members. And then Marta lights up her blade and makes a speech about how the Path of the Open Hand is going to become the Path of the Closed Fist and becomes like the de facto leader by making a speech with all of her pure beliefs. And everybody follows her. And the Herald and the mother are like, okay. Like they see the shift.
What have we done?
And they're like, okay, well, we got to play this. Like, and then Yana is trying to get her cousin to leave and she cuts her hand off.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
No, it's really, it seems a little bit out of nowhere that Marta would go that way. And out of anger.
Yeah. I'm not giving the scene justice. It's a big turning point. Like, in the book, and it is a huge, like, she gives this speech and the path becomes a closed fist, and then if you read Catalyst like me, you're like, oh, I get it, because like, they're like, we're the closed fist, and you're like, when did that happen? And then I read this book and I'm like, that's when it happened. Rad.
That's when it happened.
And then she uses the combined rods to hatch the eggs, and then they're like, we have the weapon against the Jedi. Knock at the door, battle ensues. All enforcer droids. Marta, they're arguing over the rod repeatedly. They get separated, Yana and Marta. Yana finds younglings, little kids, planting bombs around the thing, instructed to do so by the mother. She takes this to Marta and is like, look what she's doing. Marta finds the mother trying to escape and stops her. She takes the rod from her. Jedi show up, the Herald. Everybody's like, fighting, and the Jedi is like, but look at you, Alessia, you are my sister because your name's Alessia Zeveron, and it's Olivia Zeveron's sister, who I know you probably don't know Olivia because you didn't read the comics, but for me who read the comics, no. I was like, that makes sense, I get it. It was still a cool surprise.
Was it a surprise though? I feel like they revealed their last names on a High Republic show or something a long time ago. And I wish that they wouldn't have now.
They revealed Alessia, or whatever her name is, but they never gave her last name. And I've been reading all these books and going, like, there's a reason. Like, because only some people address her. Like, the Herald would be like, you know, they'd be fighting and he'd be like, come on, Alessia.
Yeah.
And like, so, like, the name would pop up in moments where I would be like, that sounds important. But mm-hmm. they didn't connect it to Zeveron. And then if you read the comics, Olivia has a moment where she sees the mother and there's like a whole freak out thing that happens, but it happens kind of during the, like all the madness on Jedha with the nameless and everything. So
yeah. So it's a chaotic. Yeah.
I saw it happen and I was trying to figure out what it is. And then when you go back, you're like, of course. But, like, at first, I didn't quite get it. And now, as it's all coming together, I'm like, yeah, that's when it was. Like, I can go back and pinpoint it.
I like that moment of, like, sort of realization that happens in this book with Olivia. Because I do like Olivia as a character. I just wish that, as a person who hadn't read the comics, I would have gotten more of her. Like, more context and more time
to
with
be
her
fair,
as a character. Because,
yeah. She is, like, she's not the main character of the comics. Like, you definitely
really?
Get a lot
okay.
of, you get a lot more of Maddie and her and everybody else. Like, Olivia's in the comics, but she's definitely, like, she's about as tangential as she is here. So you don't get too much more.
Okay.
Just
interesting. I would have liked more. I like her.
Yeah, she is interesting. And I like that really kind of fleshes out for me the mother's intentions and grudge against the Jedi.
Yeah,
you know,
it explains a lot about the mother, and it's really interesting because it's not just about you know, what the stuff that they preach about them abusing the Force. Like, there's the fact that it goes so much deeper back to, like, her childhood and the separation between her and her sister. And, like, it's just, it was great.
Yeah. So I did like that reveal quite a bit. The mother kills the Herald, stabs him with the lightsaber that she has from Kevmo's master, Zilla Macro. Mm-hmm. And then, they're wielding lightsabers through this whole book. Like, as they're escaping Jedha, Marta and the mother have the lightsabers they've taken from the dead Jedi.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. And at one point, I think even Kevmo's lightsaber gets kind of wrecked on Jedha. And later, she's trying to use it on Planet X. And she's, like, banging it around because it's, like, kind of busted. And then it starts, like, she's like, it lit, but it was all crazy, like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, it's a Kylo Ren saber now.
That's what I thought too. I was like, ooh, yeah, that's unstable. What it sounds like. Yeah. I also like that Marta ends up with this yellow lightsaber. In phase one, Marsh Joan Roe also has a yellow lightsaber that he's wielding around. Little parallel there.
Did not put that together. I like it. I love it. I want more of it. good times. So... we already know how the battle goes. The Jedi finally succeed. But what happens is that Yana and Marta drown the levelers. They sort of like get them all in the cave and gather them up, set off the bombs and cause the floods that take out all the caves. They drown all the levelers except for the big one. All like the newly hatched ones die. And Marta still has that one. Marta like.
Yeah, and Yana... baby levelers can't swim.
Yes. the Marta and Yana decide that they can't go the same way. Yet Marta still truly believes in all her stuff. She takes the gaze electric and heads out with her leveler. And then Yana escapes with the mother of her ex-girlfriend. I can't remember her name.
Opari.
Opari. There you go. I knew it was O something. You can even see it in the notes if you don't believe me. I don't know why I'm excessively defensive at the moment. With one less hand, and she ends up on the ship with Shay Ganendra, who was one of the pilots that was on the thing, and that's the girl who's like, I'm pregnant. If it's a girl, Mari. Yeah.
And all the people reading are like,
And so all of us are like, okay.
Except
that.
Alice, who didn't make the connection.
I listened to that episode. Great episode of Force Toast. Y'all go check that out.
I didn't explain the whole ending. It was so funny.
Aslan Rel is also driven mad, it seems, and is like scribbling and making the Shri Karai Karai song and all that stuff as we close out the book. So we get the wrap up of the Rose. I don't know. For me, I would really wanted to see what, because like for me, the Rose are the biggest connection to phase one that I'm trying to figure out, right?
Right.
But I didn't get the full connection, but I still really like seeing what happened to them. I still don't know which one of y'all is Marchion's grandma. You know what I mean? Because we know...
no, that's one of the big answers I wanted to know too. I'm like, we know we meet his dad and his grandmother, whose name I think is Shara or something, in the Marchion comic. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, which one of them is actually related to is it Yana or Marta? Because it really could make arguments for either one,
right? And also, it's like they both set off with things like Marta ends up in the gaze, which like we know Marchion eventually has. But Yana has Mari with her people.
Yeah.
In theory. Like, so like what, when and like it could go either way. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I still really don't know exactly who, although I would lean toward Marta. Because she's the one who has the grudge against the Jedi, whereas Yana seems to really want to get away from it all.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, no, that's. I think that's it.
So, like, I feel like thematically argument. It should be Marta. Because, like.
It's which her... you think would mean that it's like they're going to meet all. They're going to meet back up again at some point. Like, they're not just going their separate ways forever. There's going to be some reunification that must happen at some point.
But I definitely want to see that and what it is and what it means.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't like as phase two ends, I still have some questions. Question in the back.
Yeah.
But I did love the like, and if you just take this with Path of Deceit, like Marta's change from this innocent girl to this like zealot who is willing to destroy everything to protect the Force or whatever her belief. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost a little too real world sometimes. Because I can't, maybe I've just watched too many documentaries about cults.
No, wasn't it you that was talking about, we were talking about Waco when we talked about Path of Deceit, I went back and watched like a bunch of Waco stuff after that conversation, and I was like, yep, I totally see where he's coming from. There's a lot of that in
it
here.
It felt like that. And even so much the Jedi, like the Jedi coming in and like not really knowing what the situation was that they were walking into. Like, there's just so much of this, like these people who believe this whole thing and are ready to kill for it, armed to the teeth. In their own compound.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like, I'm trying to think of something a little less real world, but that's like the thing that kept popping in my head with the first, especially with Cataclysm even. We didn't really talk about Cataclysm, but like, I really enjoyed that book.
Oh, I love that book. That was like, I think that may be my favorite book of phase two.
It was really
good. But
this
book in particular is, it's a fantastic sequel to Path of Deceit, Path of Vengeance. But I don't think it's a super strong companion for Cataclysm for me. And maybe it's not supposed to be, and that's fine. But like, since the events of both novels are overlapping, it's kind of hard to not think of it as a companion piece. Yeah.
So I always go with everything, because I read it all together, but I definitely feel like if you are a big picture person, like Cataclysm is definitely the one that you're going to go with. Whereas this is really focused if you're on these characters, which like, I ended up loving the characters in Cataclysm. Like, I really like Gela, Axel, for some reason, and Fontu and Ziri, the Grey Larks and Mama Grey Lark. But I tried to think back of coming into phase two and being like, okay, we're going to go back to the past. So what are the questions that I want this to answer for the future? And those questions are all here in the Rose and the Nile and the path and all that. You know what I mean? So like, I feel like
you can see where that, where one grows into the other. Yeah.
If you're looking for those connections, this is going to be the bigger book for that, but you're still not going to get all of it, or you might not get all of the answers that you want. You'll get trajectories.
Yeah, and you'll get some answers you didn't ask or didn't think to ask, like, who are Mari Santeca's parents?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you don't care? Yeah, you're going to get that answer anyway, despite the fact that it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, where did the Shri Kara Kara song come from? Oh, you don't, it doesn't matter, but you're gonna find out anyway.
Right.
Like,
okay, now
stuff
that,
like that,
that no, there's a, and with him too, there's a thing that keeps coming back to me. I've been following Star Wars stuff since Legends, so there's a character in Star Wars Legacy comics whose name is Aslan Rey, and she's an Imperial Knight from the Fel Imperium or whatever. So every time when he popped up and it was like Aslan Rel. So in the first book, I thought it was a female because Aslan Rey is a female. But then like, as I was reading the book, I was like, oh, no, it's like it's a dude. And then he's the one that sort of really focuses on the nameless and comes up with the haunting fairy bedtime story that, you know, Stellan Geass and Emmerich Kamptor or whatever. Cry at night about. But I like
that
connection.
Trail of Shadows.
And I'd also picked up that, what is that? The Edge of Balance, the little manga. And there's a little more of that kind of stuff in there too with Aslan Rel. So I like the character.
Okay.
And I like that he's that little connective tissue to that particular mystery that those guys are picking up later.
Got it.
So, like, big picture questions. You're going to get as the, like, for me so far, this is the much, this is the big connection about the Rose. And at least for this, I can see the grudge against the Jedi, a generational grudge. I can see like a little bit about the nameless. Like, I can see like where that connection and why he knows like of those artifacts and why like maybe he started with one. Like, we know Yoda disappears because he sees one and he's like, oh, crap. But I don't know about you. Did you read Midnight Horizon?
I did. I only read it the one time.
Okay. So for me, coming out of Midnight Horizon, the biggest question is, Yoda shows up at the end of that book with a person who's like, we're going to go look into the past to figure out these answers. And the description of the person is it's a person who's cloaked and hooded and wrapped in these bandages. And you don't know who the person is. So, like, ooh, my running theories right now, my strongest theories, I don't think it's Aslan Rel because he should be dead if he's a human. I thought, what if it could be Yana? What if, I don't know how long ever any live.
Did they not make it clear, like, it was whether, what gender the person was?
No. Well, at least not to me. And I've went and reread the end of that thing like 3 times trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Oh my God. Now I got to go back and reread that book. Yeah.
I've went back to the description of that person repeatedly. And all that says is they're covered. You can't see, you know, like, cause I was like, do they have gray skin? Like nothing. I got no gender. I got no nothing. But like Yana, I thought that would be kind of cool because Yana would know. But then you also have, like, because I'm trying to figure out, like, who would know, who would Yoda seek out? And then the other thing is Yoda left. When Yoda disappeared from phase one, he disappeared with Elder Tromac, who in phase two is a little baby little of the path. He's one of the little kids who Marta takes care of in the first book.
Oh, okay.
And when he shows up
again. Yeah, I didn't
know
about that connection.
Yeah, when he shows up again, he's with somebody else. Or did Tromac just get wrecked and he's all bandaged up? And it's still Tromac, he's just wrapped in bandages. Because either way, that would be a cool connection. So I don't know. I still don't know where to place my money into the pile of who. I feel like we should be able to make an educated guess. I feel like the answer is there. And I feel like once phase three starts and they reveal who that person is, some of us are going to be like, I knew it.
We're going to be like, oh, and the rest of us are going to be like, oh, we should have known. We should have picked up on that.
And I just want to have a podcast to go back and say, I told you. So I don't know.
It's out there now. You have put it on the record.
I don't know if this is going to be it, but I would love to be correct in 8 months.
Hell yeah.
Or whatever.
I would love that for you. Yeah.
I would love to be like, I told y'all in October or whatever. So that's my fixation at the moment, trying to figure out who that character is.
Interesting.
Like I said, we're still kind of in the dark on who is more related to Marchion.
Yeah, I think that's a question. I wonder if maybe that young adult anthology series will answer that.
Yeah, they definitely said they were going to touch on a Marta Rowe story, right?
Yeah, which I'm like, I just need like one more answer from stuff. Like,
I just want that, like, just want a concrete piece of connective tissue, not these threads waving in the air. Oh, okay. So there's another comic series, a little mini series Dark Horse put out called The Nameless Terror. And it basically focuses on a ship, a path ship that crashes and a Jedi ship. And like the path ship has the eggs. So I kind of was trying to figure out, like, I'm sorry, when did this happen? And like, what is going on? And how come they're not there? Are they just like on the other side of the planet? But.
Oh, so it's like not clear when that story is taking place.
Yeah. And I think I went back and figured it out. Like when they escape, two ships escape. But I think only one of them gets to Dalna. So okay. I think that other ship, and that's the ship that has Geth, which is the father.
Yeah.
Like that other ship is the one that like the comic kind of covers what happens. But I think I was trying to figure it out timeline wise.
Yeah, because this book kind of makes it seem like that ship blows up and they're just a fireball and they're space dust now.
So, like, what happens is, like, the ship disappears while when she's, like, trying to give them hyperspace codes. So I think they went to hyperspace, came out somewhere they weren't expecting to, crashed with a Jedi ship, and that's when that other comic takes place. At least that's how I'm putting that together. not super.
How many issues is that miniseries?
It's a 4-issue miniseries. It's actually really good. The art is beautiful. It's a George Mann, and I do not remember who wrote the art. But it also connects to phase one because the person telling the story is what is her name? The like monster hunter from phase one, ex-Jedi.
Ty Yorick?
Yes, Ty Yorick. So she's telling a story that her master told her master told her master from her that is of these characters, and like I was trying to put the pieces together and I finally did.
Okay, you just answered like a big question I had months ago where I saw like some hint of this comic somewhere where somebody must have posted like an image on Twitter and I was like, why is Ty Yorick in phase two? I don't understand. I don't understand. I need an explanation. And then I just forgot to go look all that up. So now I need to actually go do that because I loved that character in phase one. She was wild.
Yeah, it's totally cool. It's super fun. It's not I think in big picture wise, it doesn't have like a lot. But it is a really good story. And then you also get to see Jedi come up. And there are characters from other stories. I know you skipped out on the middle grade books, but Rock Baran is one of the Jedi in the story. Like, and the art is really well done. And look, I don't know if you're a comic book connoisseur, but like the Dark Horse printing has like the little bit harder, thicker paper on the hardcover. And it's extra shiny. It's a high quality comic book. I'm just saying.
Okay, that's good to know. I'm an ebook e-comic girly, but I'm sure there's somebody out there that appreciates that.
Look, I took them out when I was rereading them, and I was like, these are nice comics. I keep forgetting.
Now, is this kind of something along the lines of like the High Republic Adventures? Is like this aimed at like a younger audience, or is this more of like the standard all ages?
I would treat it more like I'm trying to think of one of the miniseries from Phase One.
Like the Trail of Shadows?
Yeah, maybe more like that. It's definitely like not a younger audience tone.
Okay.
So like the High Republic Adventures, how all the main characters are young characters. I guess that's the thing about the High Republic Adventures. But like, because it's basically just Jedi and the Path members. And they crash their ships and they're dealing with this.
Got it.
Oh no, these eggs are hatching. What are we going to do? You know.
Drown them!
Yeah, it's a good... Y'all got any water?
Swim.
Y'all got any water on this planet? Yeah.
That's the answer.
What do they say? No, bears can swim. I don't know what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Here we go. Sal was trying to connect to something real life and he failed spectacularly. Okay. Like from this book, like that speech moment when she goes and she makes that speech, that was a really cool, well-written, dramatic shift, all of that, like even her cutting off her cousin's hand, it was a very hard-hitting moment of the book for me where I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's really intense. But here's my question for you. When they sort of they're getting into the ending with there's a confrontation kind of between like Maddie and Marta where Marta, it kind of seems like Marta's about to like fully take her down or let the leveler take her out completely. And Marta, like, backtracks, like, catches herself. And I think it's all because of, like, you know, she thinks of, like, Kevmo and his suffering and what he went through when he encountered the leveler and how he ended up. And that, like, it catches her off guard and she stops and she calls the leveler away and lets Maddie go and lets her live. And, like, Marta, it feels like a little bit of, like, a lot of back and forth happening at the very end with Marta.
So, but I think a lot of that, like, cause there are like all these scenes sort of leading up to that. Cause she like, when she gets the rod, she hatches the eggs, she releases them, she cuts her cousin's hand. And then remember she goes up to the, like they go to the, I don't know what they call it, but the room that like the watchtower or whatever that has all the cameras and she's seeing the bodies of these Jedi that she kind of killed. You know what I mean? Cause, and then she has like a real, oh my God, that's what happened to him. Like, and I think that's where she starts waffling on it a little bit. Like, because she definitely believes that she has to stop the Jedi. But she also, like, she's not like a mean person.
Yeah, like she, not at the expense of like their suffering.
Yeah, she goes back and forth. Like, and you're right, she definitely does. Like, she has guilt about some of the things she does, even though she has this like righteous fury about the things she does. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think it would have been really easy for them to take Marta, all the writers that worked on Marta in this phase, to sort of take her down like an anti-hero road. And I'm glad that they didn't do that, because I think there's so many stories about anti-heroes. It's like it's a little bit overplayed.
Yeah.
But they did something very different with her, and sort of the same like vein where you're like, you're cheering for her, but you know that she's doing something bad, but she's still like weirdly a purely good person that you want good things for. She's just misguided.
They definitely did a good job of making, like, she was never ever like selfish, you know, in any of these stories. Like, she did, like, for sure, you're right, she did what she thought was right, but she, even then, she has guilt, like, because she's still taking life, you know what I mean? Like, she never became evil. She did bad things, but she was also like, she is a believer in what she was doing, you know what I mean? And that's like a hard line to walk. Like, I don't feel that way with like Marcion Rowe at all. Like, I feel like he delights in killing people.
He's straight up psycho. Yeah.
And torturing the Jedi. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in that little Marcion Rowe comic.
Yeah, he literally does that.
He's like,
he's straight up torturing a Jedi just to, like, get his rocks off. I swear to God. Like, he's a full-blown psycho.
So, like, I don't feel that way with Marta. You're right. Like, where she follows what she thinks is right. And she also follows the beliefs. Like, the thing about Marta and the path that I kind of really like that they did is, like, the leaders of the path, the mother, the herald, they don't believe in the shit that they're saying. Like,
no,
they're gathering power. They're gathering profit. Like, Marta does. And when she ends up taking control of the thing, she makes it a bigger weapon that those people, like, you know what I mean? Like, she goes beyond what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, and also, like, she really believes. And I think that's the thing that, like, you can see, and it happens multiple times, even during this book, to where the Herald and the Mother are trying to realign themselves so that they can come out on top, like, reassess, you know. Like, the Mother a few times is like, I underestimated her, or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a sort of shift at some point with Marta where she starts referring to the Mother as Alicia by her first name. Like, it is so, it comes off as, like, so disrespectful, but I love it so much for her. Like, I love that for Marta. It just feels so empowering, but it's so rude towards the Mother in the best way. I love it.
It's like the button on that is when she's like, give me the rod. And the Mother is like, of course.
Yeah.
Like, when they fight for that rod, you really see the Mother's, I mean, I guess we didn't really talk about this, but we talked about how the Mother's whole thing against the Jedi was they didn't take her. And she's been like jealous and hold that grudge because she was a Force user. They took her sister because she wasn't strong enough. And that's what she does. Her power is like, she charms people without them knowing, which I sort of called in book one, Path of Deceit, when Sunshine Dobbs was like, yeah, girl, I will help you recover these things. Anything you want.
Yeah, he's her hype man.
Yeah. I was for sure like, okay, there's something going on with her. And then I sort of forgot.
Yeah, like, she must have something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and it's like her only force power is like Jedi mind tricking people. That's like, it's not even just like seducing people with charm. It's like full on Jedi mind trick. And it's like, it almost kind of like goes back. Like when you watch the original trilogy and you watch the prequels and the sequel, it's like, you kind of see now, it's like, okay, this whole mind alteration thing that Jedi can do really does kind of stem from a place of darkness. If this is like one of the places where it started with the story of the Mother and how she used it, like it's sick.
There's even a thing, like, I don't remember if it's phase one or phase two, but I think in one of these books or comics, somebody's like talking about a Jedi. Well, can you just like Jedi mind trick, or like somebody, they don't use those exact terms, but they were like, can you like trick them into saying yes or something? And one of the Jedi is like, Jedi would never do that. That's invading people's minds. That's rude.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, I remember reading that a couple different times and thinking, okay, so in this era, they don't do that. That's interesting. That's one line that's been drawn in the sand that sort of separates these Jedi from the ones that we know of in more modern times.
And we're over here like, Obi-Wan does it 12 times a day.
Right? And he's still good, right? Right?
He said it was fine. Totally.
Honestly, but, there's a reference in this book to like a time when the mother made a whole garden bloom overnight, which would have been like impossible, but it happened because the Force was with her. And I'm like, why the hell did the path at that point not interpret that as abusing the Force? Like, I don't understand. Like, that's what they're preaching against. And they saw that happen and they were like, it's a miracle. It's like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah. And like, she kind of works in this gray area, right? Because she's like, oh, the Force gives me visions and works through me, but I don't abuse it. No, I don't. You know, like, so there is like a very little like gray line that she kind of walks with it. But then also like once the truth comes out, and I also really dug the reveal. We kind of forgot to mention this, but she wants these rods so bad to control the leveler because the leveler is like slowly feeding on her. So like, you know, like there's a tussle, and as they like get back, they can see that her arm has started turning to stone. And they're like,
yeah,
it's been feeding on you because you're force sensitive. Like,
yeah.
And that was a real,
the wraps on her arms like start to come loose.
Yeah. And like her hood comes off and her like, and as we've been reading through all, like, for if you've been catching all the books in the beginning, she's described as like, she is this thing of charm and blah, 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 blah. And like every book they describe her as like, she looked a little bit more tired and a little bit older and a little bit more haggard or whatever. And it's because as we're going through this, the levelers are like feeding more and more on her.
Yeah. And she's getting like skinnier and she's got more gray hairs and and it's she's very much like degrading over the course of this phase.
And so like when you get to here and she has both of the rods, she's like, finally I can dominate it. And then, you know, her hood comes off and her hair's all white and her little arm wrap and she's half stone and she's all skinny and like as soon as they give her the second rod, she's like, oh yeah, this is it. This is the power. And then every time she's like, no, give me the rod. Okay.
And it's interesting that the rods end up separated by the end of it. Yana has one and Marta has the other. And I think Marta thinks that the one that Yana has was like destroyed in the battle or it's buried in the caves or something. But it's like kind of a little surprise reveal, I think, at the end of the book that Yana has it.
That Yana has the other half, yeah. Because Marta thinks that it's just lost. She's like, oh, it got lost in the caves, you know, whatever. But Yana totally has it at the end. It like falls out of the little hover chair. What? She's like, whoops.
Yep. Anyway, pay no attention to this.
Nothing to see here. But yeah. And then that kind of takes me back to phase one because Marchion has one and then they go to the caves to find another one they go somewhere to find the other one, but then they also go somewhere is it the Rising Storm? I'm pretty sure it's the beginning of the Rising Storm where they go find the leveler because they find one.
Yeah, don't they go to Planet X? Like, they don't call it that then. But isn't that where they go,
They go in the comic to Planet X, but they kind of do what they did in this book, how they go and they get a bunch of them. They get the eggs or whatever.
Okay. But, do you remember them being, like, force drunk in that comic like they get in this book? I don't feel like that was a thing, but maybe it was.
I think it was, like, they were just like, wow, look at this place. So I think, like, now that we can go back, we can be like, oh, they were, like, euphoric.
That's what it was. Okay.
But, like, they weren't, like, you know, like, Marta over here was falling in love and stuff. So, like, they didn't get any of that. We didn't get to see any, like, any Niall being like, I never realized how handsome you were, bro. That would have been cool.
Save it for phase three.
Yeah, there we go. But in the Rising Storm, he goes and he finds the leveler. And it's like caves somewhere. I don't remember the name of the planet, but it's somewhere else. It's not Planet X.
Okay.
So he finds they've
got alternative habitats.
So I'm wondering if that's the one that Marta, you know, I don't know. I don't, like, there's still more questions.
Yeah.
Because they go back to Planet X later. You're right. In that comic series, they do go back. But that's when they go to gather a bunch of them. Same, just like here. The Jedha stuff? Oh, like, let's talk about the Herald. The Herald is interesting. He's also very, like, I don't want to say, like, flat, but, like, I appreciate the fact that I always know what he's thinking. And, like, he doesn't play games the way that the others, like, the Mother especially.
Yeah, he's a little bit more transparent. There is one sort of weird thing that didn't quite work for me in this, where, like, at the end of Path of Deceit, the Herald is, like, telling Yana that they need to take down the Mother and, like, install Marta as the leader of the Path. And then at, like, the beginning of this book, Marta talks about how the Herald's attitude towards her is, like, frosty. Yeah. Like, he resents her in this big way. And I'm like, wait, I thought he wanted her to be the leader. No?
Yeah.
He's just, he resents her, but he wants her to be the leader. I don't know.
I kind of took that as, like, because it almost happens, like, right after this. You know what I mean? So I kind of took that as, just the way that it always was. Because, like, in the first book, she's constantly asking, oh, can I do more? Can I do more? And they're like, watch the kids.
Yeah. So
I feel like it's more of that. Like, he never even got the chance to, like, kind of sort of start working her. Because they basically went to Jenna, and then everything went off, and then he's arrested.
No, that's a good point. He didn't get his chance to, like, mold her to be whatever leader he wanted her to be, thinking that she would be, like, you know, naive enough that he could do that, which she probably would be if he had gotten the chance. He may have succeeded.
Yeah. I do like the idea that they installed, like, the idea that they're like, oh, she's so naive and, like, she'll be easy to mold. And then her just taking control, being a true believer, and nobody being able to control her. I like that dynamic.
Yeah. You know what? That I'm just now realizing as you're saying that there's some parallels to Padme in that. We're like,
yeah, that's fair.
Palpatine thought that he could, like, you know, manipulate her because she was this young, naive thing in Phantom Menace, and look what she turned into, you know.
Queen Amidala is young and naive. Good times. And then she's like, by the way, I'm going to go back to the planet and fight. You do whatever you got to do here in the Senate, Mr. Get your votes or whatever. I'm going to go throw down. Good times.
Yeah.
And I also love, like, like the Padme books, especially Queen's Peril.
There's I couldn't tell you. Like, all of them have enough, like, similar of a name that I couldn't tell you. I can't differentiate between any of them.
Queen's Shadow. Boom. Queen's Shadow
that's
is
first
the
one,
one,
right?
Yeah, but it's the second one timeline-wise. It's the one that takes place when she's a senator.
That's right.
And I love that she returns to the Senate and everybody is like, oh, this is that girl that went and started that war, huh? She came over here, she asked for a vote. They didn't vote the way she wanted, so she just went back and killed people on her planet. Whatever. Watch out for that one.
Right?
That's actually a really interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, it is. There's another side to Padme we haven't thought about.
For us, it makes so much sense of, like, they're not going to help my people. I'm going to go help my people. But for everybody in the Senate, like, she came, she asked for a vote, they said no, so she, like, upended the entire Senate, called for a vote of no confidence, and then she left before the vote even went through to go start a war.
Yeah, just pieced right out of there.
Good times. Now she's back here, now she's a senator? The heck?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Certain point of view, she's the villain in all this.
And especially, like, she's like, oh, all my friends are pacifists, because it's like Bail and Mon Mothma. Yeah, good times.
Oh,
good times.
Man. Yeah.
But I also like that the Herald is this, like, he's just kind of this, like, super ripped, like, a destruction engine when he has to be. Like, he's there in cuffs, and then when they get to the Mother, he's like, cool. And he just breaks the cuffs and attacks her. I was like, oh, yeah, the Herald is not to be messed with. And when
he's an interesting character. I mean, because he's got this, like, this wife that's very sickly that he basically is kind of using as, like, a pawn in his, you know, his game for power. And the fact that he, like, does not really seem all that broken up about his daughter and her dying, like, it's really, he's got, like, a singular focus, and it's kind of crazy that Kor's death doesn't really seem to affect him very much.
And that's the thing that I took from the first book. Like, when he didn't immediately, like, I think that would have been a good time to, like, break the cuffs and assault the mother.
Yeah.
When you find out that your daughter was killed. But the fact that he, like, still wants to play games and holds on to it until that's the last, like, I do like his directness. Like, he's somewhere half and half, right?
Yeah.
Like, he plays games when he has to, but then he also, is ready to throw hands when it's time.
Yeah. Yeah, he really is.
Yeah. Interesting character. Very fascinating. But also, like, sometimes I don't know which way he's going to roll on these things, because they switch. Like, when he sees the shift away from the mother, he's like, yeah, path of the closed fist, y'all. I was here.
Yep.
You know, he rolls right into it. He's ready to go.
Yeah. It's all about the chanting and the face paint. He's on board immediately.
At one point, they talk about how people are talking in tongues. Like, in their whatever, you know, their path meetings.
Yeah.
That also got a little too real.
Yeah, right? That's a little bit, that real, I think, is the right word. The fact there's some real world elements that are thrown into this, like, sort of
it is
cult
very,
imagery.
There's a lot of interesting things there. So Marta cut Yana's hand off. I just want to pass that to you guys. Limwatch, passing that over to you.
Yeah, I know, right? there's an alien at the beginning that gets his hand cut off, too.
Yep, she cuts off another guy's
hand, too. At the very
beginning
of this. Yeah.
Marta takes two hands in this one. See,
she does. Yeah. Man. She goes on quite the journey in this phase. Yeah. It's really, it's pretty extreme from one end to the other, honestly.
It is. And it is a straight up journey she goes on. Especially, like, from where she started. Like, I think if you just pick up this, if you just do Path of Deceit and Path of Vengeance, I think you're in for quite the ride. Now, if you're in for phase two in the High Republic and waiting for those connections, I think these might give you more of those connections, even though the bigger picture of everything going on is probably Convergence and Cataclysm. But yeah, there's a lot happening here. And the Rose journey I found really, really interesting. And this has, like, the most dramatic, like, oh my God moments were in this book. Even though, like Cataclysm had a lot of stuff happening, but I was so focused on Axel and his mother in that book.
Yeah. I was all about Axel and Gela, but I think even more so about Ciri and Fontu.
Yeah,
when I would, if I would skip ahead, I'm like, no, what are they doing? Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and I want to see what they're doing next.
We'll throw Yaddle on that list too.
Oh my God. Yaddle was so cool.
There was a lot of good stuff happening above the caves. And if you want to get the full picture of the Battle of Dalna, you need this book and you need that book.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. You gotta have both.
But yeah, this is for me, I kind of feel like phase two, I didn't expect it, especially when it started, because it kind of has a slow burn to it. You know what I mean? And I think, to be fair, all the books, every book kind of had not a slow burn, but it definitely had a moment where once it hit, you know, I could say that for pretty much all of these books in this phase. Once they hit, you're like, oh my God, and you can't put it down. Cataclysm.
Yeah.
Convergence. This book, I feel, had that. And Path of Deceit, it didn't hit till, like, the last third of the book, maybe the last quarter. But once it hit, you were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I also think they did, like, the connections to the characters. And I think maybe that's because there's less characters.
How seamless it is.
Yeah, they definitely stuck with that. Like, you get a full picture of in two books, you get the fullest picture you're going to get of Marta Roe.
Yeah, and in two books by different authors,
yeah,
the voices are so perfectly consistent. It's really unique, I think, to this phase.
Yeah.
And really, really well done. It's a crazy accomplishment, I think, having all these different authors and the different story architects working on these. And yet, from book to book, the characters sound the same. They feel the same. They feel very, like, lived in. And they know what they're doing, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, phase two is pretty much over. I am here for the ride. It was a great ride. I still have questions. So, you know, congratulations, whoever decided that. Thanks, I guess.
Yeah.
Give me that YA book.
Leaving some of this open-ended.
You better let me know what's going on with Marta. She still got One Piece.
God, that anthology. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that in such a huge way. I can't wait.
I love those anthologies. I don't know about you, but do you do the anthologies much?
Like the Certain Point of View stuff?
Yeah, or even they've had like Stories of Light and Dark and Jedi and Sith, which I think is going to be this one's going to be.
Yeah, I don't think I haven't read all of them. There's like a Clone Wars one. I read some of the stories. And even like the Certain Point of View, a lot of times I jump around. Okay. And I used a lot of those for trivia stuff, actually. It was really kind of useful to like learn pilot names and stuff from all of those books. But there's always like a couple stories in each of those that hit so hard.
Yeah.
Like I think about like the Red One and the A New Hope.
Oh, yeah.
Certain Point of View, and then there was like a Delilah Dawson story, like She Will Keep Them Warm or something about the Tauntauns and Empire one. That is so good. there's some of them that are awesome in those books. I really enjoy them.
And I feel like it's a great thing because I feel like that's across the board. Like maybe like those were yours, but somebody else is going to be like, oh man, I really like the one about the man who sold Cloud City, or... You know what I mean? Like, there's always going to... Or the one about 2-1-B. Like, there's a few...
Yeah.
Like, I think there's such a nice spectrum of stories in anthologies that while not everything might hit, the ones that hit are going to hit hard. And for me, it's usually the Daniel Jose and like, stories.
Yeah, there's always, like, you know, every story may not hit for you, but there are going to be, like, a handful of them that hit really hard for you. And, like, your friend is going to have a bunch that hit totally different, and I like it. It's a really great variety, I think, of different sort of storytelling styles that they throw together that somehow still flow. It just works. It's great.
Totally. Hey, this was fun. I appreciate you coming on and being my book buddy.
This was so fun. I agree. Thank you so much for having me back on to talk about this book and all of phase two. It was a great opportunity to get to sit and chat about phase two in general, because I really did love it.
Yeah, honestly, like a little more what's the word I want to say, like streamlined. Phase two is a lot more streamlined than phase one, and
it's like they took any lessons that they felt like they needed to learn in phase one, they took them to heart in phase two. And I think they improved on some aspects of the High Republic, and that I really enjoyed it.
Same. So I can't wait to get to phase three and where Buriaga. Come on. We need to know.
Yeah. I just need my Avar and Elzar back in my life. I need to know where they are, how they're doing.
Okay.
I love them so much.
Twitter, you know, a silly place that we frequent.
Yes.
Like, there's been some of these people tweeting. I don't know if you've seen the, like, ladies and gentlemen, Cracker Barrel has fallen or whatever.
Somebody, yes.
Somebody put Cracker Barrel on Starlight Beacon. I died.
Oh my god.
It was good time. It was good. It was great time. So, you know. That anthology
that's so funny.
I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to getting back into really digging into Marcion Roe. And these nameless creatures. And like now I'm really on the path of like, we need to figure this out. Because the Jedi are only going to be able to combat this if they can figure out what's happening. Like, even in the phase two thing, I feel like Maddie's a little like, oh, I think there was an artifact that kind of messed with our heads, throws a wrench into the whole thing. And then plus
Yoda. There's a scene in this book where Maddie has a moment where she's like kind of thinks that she's figured it out. Like during the Battle of Dalna, she's like that she kind of thinks that she's figured out how to like overcome the reaction to the nameless, and she fails at that. But I'm like,
right.
For a second, I was just like, oh my God, like, what if she figures it? Like, what if she gets it? What if she's got it? And she can, like, go back and she can tell everybody. And then, no, she doesn't.
But she survives. Like, so she still she still walks away with something. You know what I mean?
Like, she does. Yeah.
And that's the, like, you know, that's always the thing that you think of. It's like, how can they get the word out? You're like, everybody dies. Like, so you have a few survivors, then you have Yoda being like, let's not tell anybody. So I'm waiting for Yoda to be like,
an email. Yeah. You have data pads. Send an email, internal only, confidential. Yoda, put a watermark on
it. Over here, like, I don't want people to panic.
God.
Come on. Look, not everybody needs Yoda. N95s. Come on, Yoda. Give everybody N95s, please. Okay, sorry. Got you real funny.
Oh, man.
All right. Appreciate you, Laura. Once again, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Oh, come find me on Twitter. It's at @shutup_Laura, and I'll always tweet links to shows that I release with John Rocha when we do The Jedi Way. We have Kevin Smets on the show with us now. He's our third co-host, and our episodes are so fun with him. We enjoy having him on the show. And then the episodes that I release of Force Toast with Alice, I'll tweet those out too. So yeah, find me on Twitter, @shutup_Laura.
Yep, and like Force Toast Podcast, go listen to that. It is a good time. You can catch us everywhere. We're all at the Rogue Rebels on most socials, except for Twitter, where we are Rogue Rebels fan, but we are at theroguerebels.com. Please like us. Please be our friend. Please tweet us. Please follow us. Please share this podcast. Rate it 5 stars. Do all those things. Go do that for Force Toast too. Do all the things. We are so thankful. And we are enjoying High Republic. And I don't know what we're going to enjoy next week, but I think it's going to be a video game. Good times. And it might have some High Republic stuff in it. Anyway, appreciate you listening. Thank you.
The fate Bye-bye. Of all Jedi. For control of the Force itself.